the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't devour him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change lane. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam show.
Turn it up.
Indeed, 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 it is the Pancakes and Power Slam show. We are once again here live on a Tuesday night. I am Chris Featherstone, your host, Crave Wrestling, and Derek Arwell, correspondent, will be here on the line soon. We got a lot to cover today. We got SummerSlam, we got Raw, and a little bit of SmackDown, but we do have Hardcore Justice for Impact Wrestling as well. Flavor of the week this week is thumbs up or down on every member of the Four Horsemen. So that should be pretty fun. Of course, we have our trivia, and I do want to give a special shout out to Crimson once again. Thank you, Crimson. And basically last week I got my numbers in for the total listens for the show, and not including any of the links that are sent out throughout different sites and things like that, but just as far as listens to the show at the time. And congratulations to last week's show. Thank you all for who listened and supported. Actually, last week's show broke a record for total listens at the show last week. So continuing to have really, really impressive, really, really humbling numbers for the listens to the show. Thank you so much for continuing to listen to this fun, interactive show. And let's have some fun tonight like we do every night on Pancakes and Power Slams. All right, well, let's start off with our trivia question of the night. What pay-per-view did the Ultimate Warrior win his first Intercontinental title? And who did he beat? What pay-per-view did the Ultimate Warrior win his first Intercontinental title? And who did he beat? Log on live to the chat room to let us know your answers, or tweet at Crave Wrestling. All right, let's start off with SummerSlam. First, start off with the pre-show. Rob Van Dam defeating Dean Ambrose by disqualification. I want to... That match was decent. It was some high spots. It was a good pre-show match. It wasn't as good as the Usos versus the Shield. There's a lot of people who thought that had the potential to be the better match. But I think out of the whole pre-show series, it had to be the Shield versus the Usos. That was a very, very impressive match. It made sense for Rob Van Dam to win by disqualification. And just to keep it on Dean Ambrose. However, I'm just not happy with the U.S. title hunt right now. I'm not happy with how they're booking the U.S. title scene right now. And I definitely think that there needs to be a lot more investment into the U.S. title. I was a fan of having a battle royal to determine the number one contender. That made it important. However, we didn't get anything on Monday about, you know, as far as the U.S. title is concerned. The Shield's position, the Shield spot was good on Monday. We'll talk about that a little later. But as far as the U.S. title is concerned, it seems like they have no interest. mid-card titles, period. Just no interest in either one of them, and I'm just not happy with what they're doing with that. Then we start off with SummerSlam. Ring of Fire match, Bray Wyatt defeats Kane. It only made sense. Poor Kane, though, and I keep saying this over and over again. Poor Kane. It is really sad that Kane is deciding to job the way that he does. I would imagine he don't really mind. Like I said before, 2010 was his best year. He's been there since 97. And within these past 16 years, I mean, he's achieved enough, you know, to put him in a Hall of Fame. But his career has always been a bit disappointing to me. And now just it does nothing but hurt that. I can understand putting Bray Wyatt over. It was good that Bray Wyatt needed to be put over if they really want to make him and the Wyatt family relevant. However, the way that they did it was just really crazy. I understand they had to write him off for See No Evil 2, but it's just really, really sad to see Kane in the position that he is now. They tried to make him a little bit more intimidating, but that was just for the purposes of, you know, putting Bray Wyatt over. And how they booked it, too, I wasn't a big fan of either, the build. Wasn't a big fan of the build just because, like I said before in previous shows, Bray Wyatt got the advantage most of the time. So, to win at SummerSlam and write Kane off by, you know, smashing the steel steps in between, you know, sandwiching his head between the steel steps. I understand that was a write off too. They carried him out. That may imply Kane just kind of being brainwashed. I mean, it could be a decent relief from it. It seems like maybe an option would be because they did that. That could brainwash Kane. Kane could join the group for a second and then eventually Undertaker comes in play and says, well, you're my brother, you're Kane, you know, something in that nature. And then, of course, that can lead back to a Brothers of Destruction reunion. That would be good to go against Rowan and Harper. However, just don't do it at WrestleMania 30. Just Royal Rumble, I'll be okay with it. Maybe even, you know, Elimination Chamber. But just don't do it at WrestleMania 30. That's the biggest pay-per-view that WWE has ever had. And just the spectacle, just the expectation, and having The Undertaker in a tag team match would be bad, bad idea. They tried it before with him and Nathan Jones, but Nathan Jones ended up not wrestling, and so he ended up being a handicap match. Him against A-Train and Big Show. That was an awkward match, but just how they booked Taker that year, I was not a fan of by any stretch of the imagination. I'm confident the WWE won't make that mistake again, but I would be okay with the Brothers of Destruction reuniting for the purposes of facing the Wyatt family at a Royal Rumble, I would say. So next we have, and we do have a correct answer in the chat room, SummerSlam against Honky Tonk Man 1988. Absolutely, great job. Next match was Cody Rhodes defeating Damian Sandow. Made sense. I was actually in favor of this decision to put Cody Rhodes over. I think it's good for Cody. I think Cody needs it more than Sandow does. Sandow's always, you know, at any time he's prone to cash in the Money in the Bank briefcase. So he doesn't have to win to cash in the briefcase. I remember when both Daniel Bryan and Dolph Ziggler, before they cashed in their cases, they had pretty embarrassing win-loss records for a while. They ended up becoming World Heavyweight Champion, both of them. So same with Damian Sandow. I think that by Cody Rhodes defeating him, it actually helps Cody Rhodes become a main event star. And Cody Rhodes can always say, well, you won Mr. Money in the Bank. I've beaten you. Now I'm the number one contender. And he can actually, who knows, he can actually go against Del Rio and win the World Heavyweight title. I'd be totally in favor of it. I've been a supporter of Cody Rhodes for quite some time, and I think that he has the potential to surpass Dusty Rhodes. But I don't. He did initially, but I definitely don't think he does now. The way that they're booking him now, it doesn't seem like it. But he's young. He's not even 30 yet, and so he's got a good 10 years to really cement himself as one of the best. Hopefully, they really use his athleticism, his mic work, his charisma. They really use it to their advantage, because right now, turning him face was a great idea, and the crowd thinks so as well. Alberto Del Rio defeats Christian. Great match. I don't think it was as good as their match on SmackDown, though. But I do think it was up to par to the match on SmackDown. I definitely give kudos to both Christian and Alberto Del Rio for giving. I mean, there wasn't a stipulation in the match on SummerSlam. They decided to do a full main event match between the two on SummerSlam. However, they just decided to do it again on, they did it on SmackDown, and decided to do it again on SummerSlam with no stipulation, and they still delivered. So, kudos to the Alberto Del Rio and Christian for putting together two really good matches. Del Rio keeping it, wasn't a big fan of that. The WWE continues to have some type of hope in Alberto Del Rio. It just doesn't make any sense at all. I just quite don't understand that. Because he's just, Del Rio's not over. He doesn't have much charisma. His in-ring work is great. He's a really good wrestler, but his charisma is just very, very minimal. And they're trying their best to really trying to get him to be someone that the crowd boos or that the crowd even cares about, but they're not really doing a good job at it. And I don't know what it is, but Del Rio is just not really taking what he's received. I don't think he's really honing it as much as he can. I don't know if it's just his character running out. I remember in the beginning, though, I remember when he was the cocky heel Del Rio, when he first came and had the vignettes and feuded with Rey Mysterio and feuded with Christian. He put both of them out when he first came. That Del Rio was great, and when he won the only 40-man battle royal in 2011, I think that was great as well. The turn for me is when he lost to Edge at WrestleMania. I think the problem was he was so pushed. His rise was just so meteoric, and it seems like everything was just sucked out of it when he lost to Edge at WrestleMania, at WrestleMania 27. And then subsequently at Extreme Rules the next month, was it a week or so, two before then, Edge was Well, shortly after his win at WrestleMania, Edge was forced to retire because of injuries, and then it became the ladder match between Christian and Alberto Del Rio at Extreme Rules. Christian won. I was happy with that. However, once again, it did nothing for Alberto Del Rio. So, interestingly enough, close to a year and a half later, we get more Christian and Alberto Del Rio. I'm not really confident in what they're going to do with Christian now. The whole one more match thing, I think that it worked. I think people started to get behind Christian because when he debuted, it was just an odd debut. I think that Vicky Guerrero debuted Christian. He beat Wade Barrett, if I'm not mistaken. It was just kind of a lackluster. It was a lackluster debut. I was return to more of a return. However, he started to defeat some mid-carders and started to get some cheers back and started to get his momentum back. People started to respect his ring work more and more. And I do think that it was a good idea to do that. I definitely think that was a great idea to do that. So, hopefully we'll see more of Christian. I think that the SummerSlam loss definitely could have hurt him a lot as far as where we're going to see him in the future. Next, we have Natalya versus Brie Bella, defeating Brie Bella. That was a big surprise, but I was a fan of it. I was definitely a fan. I think I've said it many, many times. Natalya is one of the best. To me, she is the best diva on the roster as far as athleticism. And as you can see in the Total Divas, yes, I'll admit that I watch it. She's a trainer. I mean, she trains them, and she's the go-to person for that. Looking at the chat room here, it's not Stump the host, but I think we're going to bring that back. Yeah, that was a fun time. Dude got a question, who was JYD's opponent at WrestleMania 1? And that was Greg the Hammer Valentine for the Intercontinental title, in which JYD won by disqualification. But, it was count out. It was count out to my recollection. A count out victory. But didn't win their Intercontinental title, which I do think that JYD should have won their Intercontinental title. I think he should have had a title in the WWE. I think he was screwed out of that. But he did make the Hall of Fame. But as far as Natalya goes, I was surprised that she actually won the match. It was, interestingly enough, since 2008, she's been in like less than a dozen pay-per-view matches, and the last pay-per-view match she won was like a few years ago. And so she's not really been well-treated in the WWE. Hopefully, you know, she feuds with AJ. I can see Natalya going against AJ at Night of Champions. She probably won't win, but I think that a build should be appropriate for Natalya. I think Natalya should win the Divas title at Survivor Series. I think that that's the next big, you know, pay-per-view of the year, and the last big pay-per-view of the year, and that's in November. So her and AJ Lee can have a decent feud until then, and Natalya win at Survivor Series, and who knows? Layla, I'm not a big fan of Layla. Caitlyn could turn heel and feud against Natalya. Caitlyn gets jealous that Natalya beat AJ and she didn't. I mean, you can work around it, but Caitlyn should be Divas champ by the end of the year. Chat room, if you believe it, feel free to give us your feedback. Or if you believe that Natalya should be Divas champion by the end of the night, also call in live 347-884-8452. Thank you so much for listening. Like I said before, thank you all for listening last week. Record-breaking numbers and the numbers for the show, for the listeners of the show, continue to be overwhelmingly appreciative. Thank you. Thank you so much. And once again, throughout all the media outlets, Pancakes and Power Slams reaches an insane amount of people just as far as familiarity with the show, knowledge of the show. We're talking nearly 500,000 people a month. So if you would like to partner with us, if you would like to be an advertiser, if you'd like to sponsor, feel free to email cravewrestling@gmail.com for inquiries to if you're interested in advertising your product. Like I said, those many numbers that that know about the show and an overwhelming number that listens and supports and tweets and emails and all those type of things, your product will be exposed to a market that most likely is not you're familiar with. So it's all about business. I own a small business as well, so I definitely know how it is. So cravewrestling@gmail.com for advertising and sponsors. You will not regret it. Great momentum building with this show, and your dollars and your time and your interest will not be wasted. So let's go back to SmackDown. Let's go back to SmackDown with Dolph Ziggler and Caitlin defeating Big E Langston and AJ Lee. This also surprised me because Big E Langston and AJ Lee had the most, and I said we were talking about on the show last week, they had the weirdest spot. AJ was supposed to tap out. She tapped out prematurely. Natalya kind of set up while she tapped out. The referee just kind of miscued it. It was just weird all over. And because of that awkward loss, it seemed like there would be some type of redemption for AJ Lee and Big E Langston as a result. However, Dolph Ziggler and Caitlin won anyways. So It was mainly a throwaway match. They're just trying to do the best that they can to really kind of still tie these four in with each other, and it still doesn't make much sense because I wrote an article I wrote today on the Bleacher Report. Talked about Big E Langston. It talks about a few wrestlers that should join this new corporation. And AJ Lee and Dolph Ziggler and Big E Langston has been involved with each other. Big E Langston made his TV debut on Raw December 17th of last year. That is 8 months ago. And Big E Langston has been involved with Dolph Ziggler and or AJ Lee the entire time. The entire 8 months has been involved with those two. It is time for Big E Langston to break out. Now, here's the thing. I'm all about pushing, you know, other people and giving credit to other people. There is an analyst that's all about freeing Big E. So if he listened to that, be sure to, you know, tweet at Crave Wrestling and say, hey, you know, you gave me some love and I'll retweet it. But I agree. Free Big E. And I definitely think that he should be, because this tandem with Dolph Ziggler and AJ Lee, just it's time to go. Something needs to happen with Big E Langston, and I really hope that we don't see any type of extension with this feud. It's been going on too long. AJ Lee and Caitlin's been going on too long. Dolph Ziggler and Big E's been going on for too long, and we need some type of something different for all of them, especially Big E Langston. Next question. What former football player was a member of the Four Horsemen. Interestingly enough, we'll get to that a little later, but I'm going to ask it now so you can prepare for the Flavor of the Week. What former football player was a member of the Four Horsemen? All right, so then after the mixed tag match, we got Daniel Bryan versus John Cena, the main event of the night. Great match, phenomenal match. I definitely think that I kind of think about if John Cena's elbow wasn't messed up, if it could have been better. I think it was good. I think it was really good. I was a little bit disappointed, though, because I had my expectations on this match was very high, because people always bash Cena, and I'm not a Cena fan whatsoever, and people know throughout this nearly year and a half that we've been doing the show, and all of my colleagues and, you know, all of the people who view my articles on Bleacher Report and WrestlingInc.com, I'm not a John Cena fan. However, he's been with the business for 11 years, and I got to give him credit where credit's due. He's honed his craft. He's one of the biggest names in WWE history, and he can work. He can put on a good match if he's working with someone who is very good. He's put on great matches with CM Punk. He's put on great matches with Shawn Michaels. He's put on great matches with Edge. And he can do it if he's working with the right people. Now the match with Daniel Bryan was very good, but I was expecting a little bit more. Wasn't bad at all. It was a great match, but I was expecting a little bit more. The knee strike that Daniel Bryan did was good. It was a really good the flash magic / shining wizard finisher that he executed, and I think it was good. I wish that he would keep that finisher along with the yes lock. The yes lock is still good, but a lot of times people have. A lot of times people have another move outside of their finisher. Like, for instance, Chris Jericho has the Walls of Jericho, but he also has the Codebreaker and the Lion's Heart as well. So people usually have that. And I think that the knee strike that Daniel Bryan showed on Raw, showed on SmackDown, I think he should keep that. I was surprised that Cena that he jobbed to that move. It was a little bit anticlimactic. However, I was happy. But it's really interesting because I was looking at Triple H, and he was just overselling it. He was overselling the win. He was acting really cheesy, and I just didn't feel right about it. And Orton comes out. I was paying attention. I was paying really in-depth attention to the camera shots. I was looking at Triple H. He was still kind of lurking in the back, just kind of walking behind Daniel Bryan, just kind of positioning himself. And I said, oh, man, it really looks like it's going to happen. The tease was good. Orton walked away. And I tell you what, I have to give it to the WWE. The timing was impeccable. They really sold the win. You got the yes chance, you got the confetti, you got the fireworks. All of that was impeccable timing, because it seemed as if they were actually going to go off the air. And then at the 11th hour, it seemed like, you know, proverbially 11:59, Randy Orton comes out. And that was really good timing, because he just kind of played it. People were salivating over if he was going to cash it in. He kind of retreated a little bit, walked back, and then was the perfect cue. As soon as Triple H, I remember it so clearly, as soon as Randy Orton kind of looked back a little bit, turned around, kind of made the connection with Triple H, Triple H was behind Daniel Bryan while Bryan was looking at Randy Orton getting ready for his potential cash in, and I said, here it is. And as soon as, you know, I remember as soon as he positioned himself to being right behind Daniel Bryan, I said, yeah, here comes the turn. And then we got the pedigree, and then we got the subsequent cash in and win. So not happy that Daniel Bryan out there, you know, he's the biggest name in all of wrestling right now, just for him to only have it for, you know, I don't even know. I don't even have the official number as far as he had. I would imagine a few minutes, because the whole celebration and Orton tease, I'd imagine that was 5 minutes or so. I don't have, like I said, I don't have the official numbers, but you know, roughly 5 minute WWE title reign. But I do understand, and it's interesting. I got a tweet about this week about if it tarnished, if the 5 minute or so win tarnished his career, because that was his first title reign. And I responded, I wasn't a fan of it at all. I wasn't a fan of Daniel Bryan, you know, getting that short of a title reign. However, what I will say is that legacy is more important. The focal point is the legacy of Daniel Bryan. And I really think that I wasn't a fan of the cash in like that. It was thrilling. It was thrilling at the time. I will admit it. It was well played, and I think it was well done. I have to admit that. I wasn't a fan of it, but I think it was well done. But I think that Daniel Bryan's legacy could be cemented a lot better than the unfortunate, you know, short initial WWE title reign. So I think it'll work out. I think we can see, especially what we saw on Raw, I definitely think that we'll see more with Daniel Bryan in the future of the WWE. So all in all, I'm a fan. And as far as the SummerSlam is concerned, one of the best SummerSlams in WWE history, I must say. SummerSlam 2002 was probably the best. That was just a phenomenal, phenomenal SummerSlam. So it was great. We're going to have Toots call in. He actually is in the chat room, I see. He looks like he has something to say in the chat room. So I'm going to have him call in and because he's saying a lot in the chat room, so it seems like he has some things to say. So feel free to call in, Toots, if you'd like. If not, just continue to go in the chat room. If you're on hold, if we don't get you this week, we will next week. But before, in the meantime, we're going to bring in our Raw correspondent, Derek, who always gives us the latest and greatest from his own mind. So, Derek, our Raw correspondent, you also look at the comments of the chat room while you're in the while you're in your area where you're calling from, and this two guys a character. But other than that, let us know what you have this week, sir.
Hey, I've got a few things this week. So, let's see. It's Ghetto Blaster time. Somebody put that in the chat room. That's awesome. And, what was Flavor of the Week? Well, you had a question earlier. Who was the football player and the Four Horsemen, McMichael or Pillman? Answer from...
Yeah, it's a good call because both of them actually work. Steve McMichael is from the Bears, but a lot of people don't. Well, I would say that a good chunk of people don't know that Brian Pillman also played for the Cincinnati Bengals. So, good call on that.
Good call on that, Cincinnati Bengals. Yeah. However, go over SummerSlam. You said it was probably one of the best. Yeah. I liked it. It was good. I saw most part of it, and Daniel Bryan's got... Daniel Bryan's just got a ton of steam, and he's going to continue to grow. Yeah, I saw the what happened last night at the end. That's not going to hinder him. He's going to continue to grow. It was kind of weird for SummerSlam to end on a down note like that, but it also it kind of leads to the storylines, what they're trying to produce, what they're going to produce, and anything with Daniel Bryan right now just cannot be discouraged. And the CM Punk losing to Brock Lesnar, I think I was kind of like you. I thought CM Punk was going to win. However, Paul Heyman, bless his heart, just kind of ruins it. He ruins everything. I'm not a Paul Heyman guy. So it's Paul Heyman had the upper hand on CM Punk. We're going to keep it at that. Brock Lesnar, what's going to continue with that feud? Is Brock Lesnar going to stick around? He usually just kind of comes and goes as he pleases. And enough about SummerSlam on my part. I want to go to Monday Night Raw. Cena upset Orton. Pinned Bryan after the match. So Cena was pretty upset about that. Said it wasn't fair, wasn't right, which that's kind of been the Cena role for a while. He's playing the big brother, if you will, of superstars to Daniel Bryan. And announces that... That was disgusting. That was something, yeah, you should rehab that. You should get off for a while, just do what you got to do, and continue, get surgery. That was like a spider egg sac or something, or a softball. So get that taken care of. Daniel Bryan is more than capable of holding the title, taking the torch from you until you return, which you probably will, and you'll probably steal the spotlight from Daniel Bryan. So... John Cena, good for you. We'll see you in a little bit. Stephanie McMahon also comes out. She has Daniel Bryan taken, boarded. I'm excited about that. To have a McMahon in your corner, to have a McMahon be in the stage with you on the square circle, that's just going to help your career. It's going to further your career. She opposes it, obviously, but having him escorted out just kind of makes him look like an outlaw. Keep that up. After that, you got Cody versus Sandow. That was a great match. And again, as good as Cody and Sandow were when they were tag team partners, they make just as good enemies. And Cody Rhodes got the upper hand last night, as well as he did SummerSlam. And Cody has nowhere to go but up. It obviously just wasn't his mustache, is what I might have said weeks before, but a lot of people did. It was fun to poke fun of and see where you got with it. However, Cody Rhodes is really starting to prove himself to live in his father's footsteps or his older brother's footsteps. I miss the old Goldust, the ooh, 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 ooh. That was something special. If you can remember Goldust with it was Booker T, what a great combination that was. And Cody Rhodes, again, I'm excited for his future, what's going to happen with him, and with Sandow as well. I like Sandow. I'd like to see that feud continue to go. Ziggler, 3-1 match. Dolph is speared and pinned by Ambrose and Shield. Dolph Ziggler's another one. He's an up-and-coming guy. But actually, not too much up-and-coming. He's been around for a while. But he's really starting to get his niche into what he's going to be capable of in the future. And after that, Del Rio versus Sin Cara. What was that all about? Ricardo comes out, and he's tired of Del Rio, which I would too. Del Rio, in my opinion, is kind of, he's lost a lot of his esteem, his charisma the last couple weeks after he's lost his ring announcer, and just for the fact that he's totally kind of distanced himself from what he was. He used to come out in the cars honking the horn. That actually kind of got on my nerves, but I was thinking about that the other day. He doesn't do that too much anymore. So Del Rio, he needs his ring announcer. That's what made him special. And now that his ring announcer, Ricardo, is now with RVD. That's cool for me. That's good for RVD. Rob Van Dam continues to put on great matches since his return to the WWE. It's classic RVD. Really happy to see what's going on with him. And always been an RVD fan member. He's Mr. Monday Night back with ECW when he was in WWE for a while, TNA, not so much. But he is returned back to his normal self. Happy to see RVD back, and especially when he's got a ring announcer. He's got that extra flair. Not that he needs it, but he's got it. Big Show is backstage, wants to team with Mark Henry. I'm excited to see that. Two giant behemoths. Kind of forgotten, not so much forgotten, but somewhat forgotten superstars that they team together. It's going to create a whole new genre of respect for these two individuals. That's been with the WWE forever, been wrestling forever. And we'd really like to see these two produce some really great matches. And if they go against the Shield, there's so much that can come out of that. It's about Maddox appears and ends up making that a match for the night. Big Show versus the Shield, minus Mark Henry. Show puts up a great fight. All members of the Shield have to pin the Big Show. To me, I mean, that was something to really make Big Show look a little more dominant than what he has been lately. I know he's been gone for a little while, so before that, the Big Show has a lot. He still has a lot to show for his in-ring talent and his pure talent in wrestling, being able to cut promos the way he does. I'm really looking forward to see him continue this new chapter. I kind of look at it as a breath of fresh air for Big Show. Maybe for Mark Henry, but not so much. He was supposed to retire a few months ago. Lost to John Cena, and he's still hanging around. But I find Mark Henry quite entertaining. I like to see his in-ring work. He's just a massive person, a great superstar. CM Punk comes out. He challenges Heyman. Heyman walks out with Curtis Axel. And Heyman has Axel wrestle CM Punk. So Punk versus Axel is a great match. It kind of makes you realize that CM Punk is, you love him and you hate him. He's kind of a mixed opportunist. He really makes the most of everything that he does. He breathes and sleeps this business, I believe that. And he always performs to his fullest potential. I've never been a huge CM Punk fan. Am I today? I don't really think I am that much. But CM Punk is somebody that he's always going to draw your attention, like him or not. So Wyatt's an R-Truth. Bray Wyatt dominated R-Truth. Kind of figured that would happen. 3MB versus the Usos. I'm still not huge on the Usos. However, 3MB isn't much of anything to talk about. And that was kind of a put-in-there match, so good luck with that. Miz versus Wade Barrett. It was a good match. Fandango interferes. Fandango is keeping his fingernail into the WWE Universe. And I'm happy to say that. I know I've been a huge advocate for Fandango. And I believe there's still something there that can be capitalized. And he continues to show up. That's exciting. That's great for me. I love that. So keep the Fandango thing rolling. Vince McMahon, Triple H, and Stephanie. Questions, Brian. Of the WWE, they bring out Orton. They call out Brian. The Shield interferes, turns into a big schmoz. That was Monday Night Raw for the most part. Not the best Raw in the world. It was decent. I'll give that much. It's good to see a fresh Big Show show up every now and then. So I'll probably try to throw it back to Chris here in a second. 347-848-452. I'm Derek, the Raw correspondent. Argue with me. Tell me that I'm wrong. Tell me I'm right. Let me know what your thoughts are. We're looking for support here. Everybody loves wrestling. Everybody that tunes into the show, I know you're out there, thousands of you. We see the numbers. Pancakes and Power Slam Studios, nothing to do. We're going to rise. We're going to grow. This is your home, your spot for professional wrestling. Let's keep the vibe going. What's going on? Bye.
Thank you, as always, Derek, the Royal Correspondent. Fantastic job, as always. We might have to hold off on Toots this week. I'm just going to, you know, just tackle a few things that he said. He pretty much covered the Raw end for this week. And real quick, before I go into Raw, I wanted to save CM Punk versus Brock Lesnar for last because it was, in my opinion, was the best match of the night. There's a couple spots in there that was a little odd. But other than that, I think the thrill, I think the Los Angeles crowd was in that match the most. I think the back and forth spots was really good. It made it seem as if either one of them was going to win. From the very beginning, it was just hard for me to imagine, you know, CM Punk and Brock Lesnar on paper. I understand Punk is, you know, just he's one of the biggest names that the WWE has now. Brock Lesnar, you know, has been that. And, you know, it made sense. It made sense because they're both Paul Heyman guys. But just physically, it just was really hard for me to imagine that. Brock Lesnar did have his way with CM Punk a lot, but he did a great job just kind of honing in his wrestling skills again. And he's been doing that. I've seen a good evolution with Brock Lesnar because when he, a year ago, when he fought a Triple H and Extreme Rules at John Cena, you know, his wrestling skills weren't really there as they were 10 years prior. However, I do see with the Extreme Rules match with the WrestleMania match at Triple H was good, in my opinion. And this match was good as well. And I definitely think that Brock Lesnar is really beginning to acquire those wrestling skills again, and I'm getting impressed. He's just knowing the psychology behind it again. He's knowing how to sell and doing all those things because, you know, of course we know that he would break CM Punk in half, but CM Punk, you know, held his own, and he did what he needed to do to really make it a very intriguing match with the finish not being predictable. And I think it was good because I actually predicted last week that CM Punk was going to win because of what Brock Lesnar's been doing with him, and Brock Lesnar actually got the win, so I'm happy about that. I posted a trivia question. Crave Wrestling, our staff, posted a trivia question on the chat room. Who is known as the Red Rooster? And got a correct answer being Terry Taylor. So congratulations with that. But yeah, the CM Punk and Brock Lesnar was a phenomenal match. Really, really good match. Match of the night. So kudos to both CM Punk and Brock Lesnar. I'm going to touch on a few things from Raw. Like I said, Derek did a great job from there. I'm going to go with the Rhodes and Sandow was good. I'm glad Rhodes won again. The CM Punk in-ring promo, I'm going to go a little bit on this. Now, from what we reported, there's a lot of people who thought the big guy in the front was a plant. We reported in Wrestling Inc. that, you know, it was no plant. He legitimately got upset with the big guy. We'll get to that in just 1 minute. Before then, I want to get to Dolph Ziggler and the Shield. I think that this could help Dolph Ziggler, actually. I was talking about breaking away from the AJ, you know, Big E feud. I think that this should go further than Raw. I really want to see a Dolph Ziggler Dean Ambrose match at Night of Champions. I think that would be great. I would imagine Dean Ambrose keeping the title. I would be okay with Ziggler getting the U.S. title. I don't think, I've said it before, I just don't think he's that main event material. I think he can be worked on more, but I just don't see Ziggler as the top guy. He, you know, if he kind of, if he's a face mid-card champion, if he's U.S. champion, maybe that'll help him kind of try to go that path as a face. But we need to start now. And being in a feud with Dean Ambrose for the U.S. title would be a good idea. So hopefully we see more with that than just the handicap match because he made a comment of Triple H. So then the Alberto Del Rio and Sin Cara match. Now, we also report on wrestling that Alberto Del Rio had a legitimate heat that Sin Cara, he dislocated his finger. So it was legit. He did dislocate his finger, which I still don't see the spot that he did that. So add that on the botch column for Sin Cara. I mean, he's just, it's unfortunate that his career is just so, it's just such a disaster in the WWE. He was Triple H's project, and even, you know, even Don to be the, even projected to be the next big Latino star. It's really, really unfortunate that they're doing that, and it just I'm just absolutely shocked that they would just decide to do something like that. So as far as his career is concerned, and keep trying to make him relevant. I mean, I've said it before. Put the guy in NXT. He doesn't deserve. I mean, he doesn't belong on WWE TV. Now, there was a part of me yesterday on Raw that said, "Okay, let's give Sin Cara another chance. Let's do it one more for Sin Cara, and have him defeat Del Rio." Have him be the next guy in line for the World Heavyweight Championship, and there you go, Triple H. There's your there's a revival of your project with Sin Cara. Del Rio's will heal. Maybe Sin Cara get some sympathy, cheers. Maybe that would have worked. But my idea, my hope was thwarted by a simple dislocated finger. Now, come on, Sin Cara. You just got to show me much more than what you're showing. Now, I've followed, you know, I watched Místico in Mexico. I've watched some, a lot of footage with him, and he was just a sensation then. But now, just in the States, just not doing it. Like I said, NXT is the best option for Sin Cara right now. Hunico and Camacho and all of them, you know, they went to NXT and it was better for them. And I definitely think that Sin Cara should go to NXT because WWE TV is not working for him. And you know, people aren't fooling people. People aren't really interested in the load dimmed lights anymore, Sin Cara. So you can keep that as well. So I try my best to really hold on to Sin Cara. I'm not 100% letting go of any hope that he has, but probably about 97% there. He needs to hone his craft and quit botching. Go to NXT, become a kind of, you know, mold himself into the WWE style wrestling, and he'll be good to go. But if we see him on more TV, he'll get more dislocated fingers and all the other things that he's received from the botches and the injury prone, and just no good for Sin Cara. And even with that, I was a little weirded out by the alignment of Ricardo Rodriguez now announcing for RVD. I don't quite get that. As soon as I saw that on Raw, I tweeted, Bill Alfonso is disgusted right now. For those who follow ECW, Bill Alfonso was the whistleblowing manager of Rob Van Dam. And, you know, bring him back other than Ricardo Rodriguez. How in the world are people going to... I'm just looking... I want to see how it works because I'm not buying it. However, I'm not totally going to just, you know, disqualify it from any type of contention of working. But I'm not buying it. I don't see how Ricardo Rodriguez would benefit in announcing Rob Van Dam. It doesn't even really flow off the tongue like Alberto Del Rio. Rob Van Dam. I don't understand it. I don't think that it'll work. So, we'll see how that works. Primetime Players defeats Real Americans. Primetime Players playing the babyface role now, seemingly. We got an announcement earlier this week. Kind of felt as if we might have got that, and we did. So, no further on that. The Shield defeating Big Show, I think Derek was correct as far as it did help the Shield. Big Show did seem intimidating. The pin, I guess, you know, it worked. You know, it made sense. It was the Shield, and It wasn't only a handicap match, you know. It was they all were in at the same time, so it made sense. And it wasn't Big Show kept his integrity by getting pinned. So let's go to CM Punk and Ring promo. I'm not going to address it too in depth. I might write an article about it on the Bleacher Report and get slandered by all the CM Punk peasants, so to speak. Mind you, I've said this many times. I appreciate CM Punk's work. He's a very good wrestler. I will still say to this day that he's overrated. But you know, he has a cult-like following, and I think people are so drawn into the CM Punk. Name, the CM Punk character, everything that represents CM Punk. He's so anti-hero. He's anti-establishment. He's just anti everything. And I think just people embrace the, you know, anti-movement. And I'm not a fan of it, but I can definitely see why the fans are. I think I'm going to save it for a Fight of the Week as far as my address to the CM Punk marks. I'm going to save that for a very controversial Flavor of the Week one of these days. Coming soon. I'm going to do it with some decorum and some respect, and I'm going to do it civilly. But I got some words for the CM Punk marks. But as far as his promo is concerned, I understand the passion into it. I think he played it well with Paul Heyman. But just the comment with the fan was just outlandishly ridiculous to me. You have someone who paid to sit down or stand up to watch you, and without him and the other audience, you wouldn't make the money that you do now, and you wouldn't be in the position that you do now. So you start crying over someone that booed you. Now, we reported that it wasn't a work. We reported that it wasn't a plant. I hope that it is a plant, because if it was a plant, that means that all of us are fooled, and that's a good thing. But if it wasn't, but if he wasn't a plant, I've got some really big issues with that. I got some really big issues with CM Punk breaking the script and commenting on someone who simply has all the freedom that he wants to boo CM Punk, and he paid for his ticket to stand right there and say whatever he wanted to. And the thing is, it wasn't even worthy to be edited. It wasn't censorable. It wasn't tasteless. It wasn't it wasn't any of those things. It wasn't disrespectful. The guy didn't like CM Punk. He booed him. He's a fan. He has every right to do that. He showed his feelings on CM Punk. He had every right to do that. So because of that, CM Punk should have done nothing but respected him. So that goes to show that CM Punk is a little bit more thin-skinned than John Cena, and saying a little bit is a compliment, is a gross understatement, saying a little bit. So clearly, the guy is thin-skinned. John Cena, for years, has played a babyface, and he's had people say much more than just a simple boo. And, you know, he's got to the point that he's embraced it. That's why I tell you, I'm not a Cena fan, but I tell you what, I've grown to respect John Cena because for so many years he's received so many things, and people say what they want to say about John Cena. But even with that, he still says, I do this for you. Whether you love me, whether you hate me, I do it for you. And he just kind of smirks with the response that he gets from the crowd, because he knows that there are going to be some really bad Cena haters, which they can do that because they pay because they pay to have a response. They pay to make you get money. So it just really bothered me. It really bothered me yesterday that CM Punk decided to do that. I think it was tasteless, and I think it was disrespectful. I think it didn't really. I don't think it really gave CM Punk I don't think it was really a good representation of the WWE product by CM Punk doing that. So that was my take on it. It happens, and I do think that it's something that hopefully doesn't happen again. And I'll tell you real quick. I wasn't happy also that the crowd response was the way that it was, because I don't think that was something to cheer about. He just basically called out a fan, told him to come into the ring so he can beat him up because he booed him. When was that ever okay to cheer about? Good call here in the chat room. It's a comment that said he punched a fan before that for pushing him on accident. And I remember that segment as well, when Vince McMahon was in the ring, and when he was with the whole, when he was feuding with Ryback, and CM Punk was forced to kind of retreat in the crowd, and yeah, he punched a fan. So This guy is just not. There's nothing about CM Punk that exudes babyface, but he has such a following, and I think that is just people are just. Like I said, I'll save that for a flavor of the week. There's so much I would like to go into that, but Yeah, I'll say that for the for a fun, controversial flavor of the week, and we'll just keep it for there. The interaction between Curtis Axel and CM Punk was good. I don't know if it's going to set up for a match between the two. I would imagine that Axel would be the buffer for CM Punk. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with Punk versus Axel. However, either you make it for the Intercontinental title and have Curtis Axel beat Punk by disqualification or something like that, or you drop the title from Axel, because the Intercontinental title needs to be utilized. If it's on someone, it needs to be defended. I wrote an article on Bleacher Report. I always write a SmackDown review, and I said that basically since he won the title in Father's Day this year, June. So in the past 2 months, he has only defended the title four times, and the last time he defended the title was over a month ago against Chris Jericho. So he needs to start defending the title. That's, I mean, you defended the title. I remember back in the day, and I would imagine that some people in the chat room would concur with this, and especially Derek, our Raw correspondent. I remember back in the day where you had a 30-day rule. You win any title, it didn't matter what it was. It didn't matter if it's the world title. It doesn't matter if it's the television title. It doesn't matter if it's the light heavyweight title. You had a 30-day rule. You had within 30 days to defend the title, and if you didn't defend the title, you would automatically be stripped of it. Yeah, so where's this 30-day rule apply now? I definitely know that it's the times are changing as far as the 30-day rule, but that's something that should have never left. It just doesn't make sense for someone just to carry a title and not defend it. This makes absolutely no sense. I definitely think that Axel should drop the title if he's not going to have the title be involved with CM Punk. So, and plus, it would make the Intercontinental title more prestigious if it's being defended with, if it's involved in this Axel and Punk feud. So that's my take on that. As far as Bray Wyatt and R-Truth, that didn't make any sense. Poor R-Truth is what I say about that. Usos, I'm a big fan of the Usos. Miz, they're trying their best to make him relevant as a babyface. I'm okay with his feud with Fandango. A good mid-card feud. You need that. As far as the Randy Orton coronation, I think that I think the Randy Orton coronation was good. I think Triple H's promo was good. I think he did a great job being heel. I think the explanation was good. I think it was well played, and the Daniel Bryan emphasis of really focusing on him. You know, this is just the start of the program. So for all those who weren't happy that he, you know, said he looked weak for getting beat up by the Shield and RKO'd, just give us some time. Be patient and just know that Daniel Bryan will come out the victor, because they're really spending some time with Daniel Bryan and making him a main event star. So I liked it. I liked the coronation segment. And I think that even though Daniel Bryan was beat up, I do think that it had a lot of promise in the segment, and we should be in for some good TV in the coming weeks. All right, let's talk about Hardcore Justice. We got a little bit of time left. I'm going to zoom through Hardcore Justice and possibly ROH. As far as SmackDown's concerned, like I said before, Christian defeating Damian Sandow, and then Axel defeating Zack Ryder. That didn't make any sense. Poor Zack Ryder, similar to Kofi Kingston and R-Truth. And so Daniel Bryan Waybeard was a good match, and it set up the turn by Triple H, because Triple H was very pro very pro Daniel Bryan at the end of SmackDown, so it made sense. It made it turn even better. All right, Hardcore Justice. Kazarian defeated AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, and Austin Aries. And like I always say, for in-depth analysis of Impact Wrestling every week, I have an article on wrestling.com, the Impact Wrestling Review. Check it out. I make some really fun and interesting comments and responses and thoughts on the Impact Wrestling Review, and I've actually added a little bit more pizzazz on it. The last time I put tweets of the wrestlers post-match, so you'll get to look at some post-match tweets of the wrestlers that were involved in the match as well. So really fun Impact Wrestling Review, WrestlingInc.com. Kazarian defeats AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, and Austin Aries to get 20 points in the ladder match Bound for Glory series. I think that was a good choice. I also said in the article that I think it was a good choice to really involve, to really kind of make it meshy as far as the point total is concerned, so it makes the predictability factor a lot less. So Dixie Carter with Main Event Mafia to address Kurt Angle rehab. Broke kayfabe, but I think it was a good idea. Ace and Nate interrupt. Both groups exchange words, and Ace and Nate attack and outnumber Main Event Mafia. ODB defeats Gail Kim and Mickey James. That was a pretty sloppy match. Rampage Jackson brings out Tito Ortiz, asks him to join the Main Event Mafia for tag team match elimination, tag team match next week, or this coming week now. As far as the loser loses his job in TNA. As far as check out the article as far as my take on Rampage Jackson's mic work. Wasn't as bad as I thought it was. Bully Ray comes out to Tito Ortiz's music. That was a botch. Talks down to Ortiz, which outrages him. Bobby Roode defeats Samoa Joe, Magnus, and Mr. Anderson. For 20 points in a tables match, also a good idea for Bobby Roode to win. And then Bully Ray defeats Chris Sabin to become the two-time TNA champion as a result of Tito Ortiz turning on Rampage and by hitting him with the hammer, celebrating with Taz and Bully Ray. Also think that was a good idea with Tito Ortiz being a part of, I don't know if he's officially, we'll see. We'll see if he's officially a member of Aces and Eights or if he's just an affiliate. So Tito Ortiz as a heel correlates to, kind of makes sense with his Huntington Beach bad boy, MMA gimmick that he's had for his career. So plus he didn't have to wrestle as much. So I definitely think it's a good idea. All right, we're going to bring Derek, our world correspondent, in and have some fun about with the flavor of the week, talking about a little bit of Four Horsemen here, thumbs up or down. We've got about a good solid 10 minutes or so to do a thumbs up and thumbs down. Before I bring him on, real quick, who did Kurt Hennig defeat to win his first Intercontinental title? Who did Kurt Hennig defeat to win his first Intercontinental Championship? Before I bring on Derek, our Royal Correspondent, I just want to talk about ROH for just one moment. 100 episode for ROH. And the program commentators were Jay Lethal and Roderick Strong. It was a best of episode. It had some really good matches depicting the 100th episode. And Jay Lethal and Roderick Strong actually didn't do too bad on commentary, so it was pretty cool. Jay Lethal defeats El Generico. That was the first match from episode 2. Jay Lethal wins the TV championship. I remember that because Jay Lethal was just recently released from TNA, and he almost immediately went to ROH. He really honed his craft in ROH. So he went back to ROH and became TV champion. So I was a big fan of it. I'm a huge, big fan of Jay Lethal. Always I've been a fan of Jay Lethal for a number of years now, and wasn't the best. He deserves a world title somewhere, TNA or ROH somewhere. It deserves a world title. And then Briscoe's defeating Elgin and Strong defeating the Briscoes by DQ, and then the Survivor of the Fittest finals with Jay Lethal being the winner. So two of the matches just show that Jay Lethal is the man in ROH. So kudos to him. Hopefully he becomes world champion soon. Got a wrong answer in the chat room. Who did Kurt Hennig defeat to win his first Intercontinental title? So far, so wrong. All right, I have Derek, the Raw correspondent, on the line. We're going to talk a bit about some Four Horsemen. So what we're going to do now is going to be a little fun. Thumbs up or thumbs down for each Four Horsemen member. There's about a dozen of them all together. From 1986 to 1999, 13 years, we're going to talk about the Horsemen. So let's start off with Dean Malenko. He was only there for a year, the latter part, the latest group of the Four Horsemen. I give Dean Malenko a thumbs up. I think that his size, I think that his athleticism, I think that his character, it really fit in with the Horsemen. I think that having Dean Malenko, although he was a mid-card star at best, I do think that he really had the he was kind of like a hybrid of Ole Anderson and Tully Blanchard, as far as Ole Anderson in his demeanor, but Tully Blanchard in his isn't his in-ring work. So I think that he fit in pretty good. So thumbs up for Dean Malenko, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, thumbs up for sure. Dean Malenko, the man of a thousand holds. He was somebody that he kept a low profile. Not too many people can say, oh, yeah, I remember Dean Malenko. He's somebody, again, he was Four Horsemen material. He was someone definitely that you could rely on. He was a technical wrestler. He really, really, I mean, just patented scientific wrestling. So he's definitely a great horseman. Give him a total thumbs up. What else you got?
Cool. Great job by the chat room. Tito Santana is indeed the correct answer. Next we have Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett was only there in 97, feuding with Mongo McMichael around that time with Deborah, spot for the Four Horsemen. Definitely a thumbs down for me. Now, Jeff Jarrett as a wrestler worked out. He ended up being way better than his Horseman days. He joined the NWO, became WCW World Champion towards the latter part of WCW. So his career, you know, ascended, catapulted, got much better than the Horseman days. But as far as him as a horseman, he had this little spaghetti strap kind of outfit on with his tights, just with Deborah. Just, it was just really odd. So definitely a thumbs down for me.
Yeah, thumbs down. Outside of the forward, nothing against Jeff Jarrett. It wasn't a great match for the forward.
Looks like we're having a little bit of technical difficulties here with Derek, our world correspondent. So we'll bring him back on once we get those together. So let's do this. Let's go to the next one. Let's go to Kurt Hennig. Kurt Hennig was also in the Horsemen in 97, but it was just a ploy. He ended up turning on Flair. He was trying. They were trying to get a spot for Kurt Hennig, and Kurt Hennig ended up turning heel and smashed Flair's head in the cage. War Games in 1997, and then they did the big old Horseman parody with Nash talking about, you know, it's my spot. And Anderson, you know, giving Hennig his spot, and him saying it'll be an honor for him to turn on him. So, all in all, Kurt Hennig may have worked, but
all in all, I would give it a thumbs down.
Kurt Hennig was beautiful. He was built for the Four Horsemen. He didn't need, again, he was another one that didn't need the Four Horsemen, like I said about Jeff Jarrett. But Kurt Hennig embodied the attitude and the demeanor to be a Four Horseman. But at the end of the day, he didn't need them. I mean, that's the beautiful part of it. So, I mean, the elite group that they were, Kurt Hennig bypassed that, and it was kind of a sneaky way to do that, to join the NWO, smash the cage in front of Ric Flair's face. However, that's Kurt Hennig. So, I mean, he's a definite thumbs up for me. He kind of destroyed the Four Horsemen in a way, but however, I mean, he was the person that I wanted to see do that. So, keep going. Who's next?
Very, very interesting. All right, let's go with Lex Luger. He was only there for a year back in '87. He took over Ole's spot, and he was the muscle of the Horsemen. He ended up having a very, very good. Interesting enough, he was another person who catapulted after the Horsemen. He ended up becoming a face, winning multiple U.S. championships, was one of the best, actually, in my opinion, the best U.S. champion of all time, the longest reigning U.S. champion of all time. One of his reigns was over 500 days. Of course, became multi-time world champion. So I would definitely give Lex Luger, it's tough because I don't think he really fit the mold of a Horseman. But because he was a muscle, because he made sense as a muscle, I'm going to give Luger barely a thumbs up.
I barely give him a thumbs down. It was a booking thing that Lex Luger was put with the Four Horsemen. Didn't really fit in with them, didn't mesh with them well, just didn't make too much sense, I don't believe. And Lex Luger, you know, went on to be bigger, I don't want to say bigger and better things. The Four Horsemen's probably one of the few best things that happened to wrestling, but it wasn't a good fit, wasn't a good match. So I believe that Lex Luger, a little bit of a thumbs down for the Four Horsemen, wasn't there very long. He did bigger and better things outside of the Four Horsemen, so it wasn't a highlight of his career. It should have been, but wasn't. So let's continue.
Sounds good. Let's go with Brian Pillman. Pillman was there from 95 to 96, kind of an advent of the kind of new, edgier Four Horsemen. To be honest with you, I think that Pillman was a good inclusion, but it really didn't do anything for Pillman, and he was an odd person. He was an odd person in the group. So I'm going to give Pillman a thumbs down.
I don't want to give Pillman a thumbs down, but I will, just because I think he did better in the Hart Foundation than he did with the Four Horsemen. And he's a character that, I mean, he went way before his time. He had so many years in front of him, so many great angles and matches to be booked in. But as a Four Horseman, he was good for what it's worth, but, again, didn't really fit him as well. And I think he did better, and, like, I just previously mentioned, the Hart Foundation. He was a better character, and Four Horsemen, not so much. I'm glad he was a part of it. It's got to be a pinnacle, so good for him. Thumbs down, however, could have been better.
All right, Steve Mongo McMichael, he had two incarnations with the Horsemen. You know, we don't have much time. We got about 5 minutes or so. I'm going to be real short with Mongo and Michael. Thumbs down. A horrible idea. Had no place in a Horseman. Thumbs down, period.
Yeah, thumbs down with you. Let's go.
Yeah, definitely. Let's go with Chris Benoit. He also had two incarnations with the Horseman, 95-97 and 98-99. Total thumbs up for Chris Benoit for me. I think that he was a fantastic addition to the Horseman.
He was. He embodied the Horseman as far as his attitude, style, his wrestling technique. Chris Benoit, the Rapid Wolverine, he was something really intense. You could just feel the intensity come through the TV screen when you watched him. If you saw him live, you know what it was. So I think, yeah, thumbs up again, Four Horsemen with Chris Benoit. It really worked out well. And let's continue.
Let's go Sid Vicious, 1990-1991. He was also a muscle of the Four Horsemen. I'm just going to – I don't think there's much with him, too. Flair's talked about how, you know, Sid was not one of his favorite people in the Horsemen. And it's so funny because I give Lex Luger just a barely thumbs up because I think it helped him a lot. And because I really – because in my heart of hearts, I didn't like Luger and the Horsemen. I think I barely gave him a thumbs up. But I don't think there's anything barely about Sid. Thumbs down completely for Sid. I didn't think that he was a good addition.
Sid for the Horsemen, no, didn't work. He never really found his niche in wrestling, period, I don't believe. He's been Sid Vicious, Sid Justice, Psycho Sid. And he's always just been a mediocre. They put him in the main event, but never really made much a whole lot of sense. So Sid Vicious and the Four Horsemen, not a big fan of it. Barely remember it. So that's all I got to say.
Let's go with Sting. 89-90 was basically just a build. I remember they broke up a Clash of Champions 90. It was basically just utilized to get Sting in the title hunt against Flair. He ended up being at Great American Bash. Sting's my all-time favorite. So, but unfortunately, thumbs down. I don't think it was a good addition.
Definitely not. Thumbs down. Sting's a face. He's always been a face. He always will be a face. The Horsemen is a group of villains or heels. Why was Sting in the Four Horsemen? Never made sense to me. So I honestly don't believe Sting. Yeah, thumbs down. Just didn't make sense then, doesn't make sense now.
Barry Windham, real quick. I've probably got a minute left. Barry Windham, absolutely thumbs up for me. One of the best the Horsemen offered.
Barry Windham is a class act. He's Lanza's son. No, Windham. Anyway, yeah, awesome. He's great. He was a great Horseman. He's a very underrated wrestler. A lot of people haven't heard of him. He needs a lot more recognition than what he's got in the show. Thank you.
All right. Paul Roma, 93. We've got a couple more left.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Roma, 93. I think he was the worst Horseman, so absolutely thumbs down.
Yeah, Paul Roma, I remember him Power and Glory more than anything, WWE, so his Four Horsemen run really didn't mean much to anything.
Absolutely. Tully Blanchard, yeah, Tully, Arn and Flair. I don't think that there's any type of dispute with that. I think the original Horseman was the best Horseman to me. Ollie didn't get in the Hall of Fame, but Barry did. But real quick, 30 seconds for me, Derek. The original Four Horsemen, all thumbs up for me. What do you think? Including James A. Dillon.
All thumbs up. J.J. Dillon, Ric Flair, the Minnesota Wrecking Crew, and Tully Blanchard. Absolutely, probably the best stable that's ever put together. The one that could possibly rival them was Degeneration X in the 1990s. 347-8452. Please argue with me. Tell me that I'm wrong, but those two factions just absolutely changed professional wrestling.
Awesome. 347-884-8452 is the number put in your back pocket. Fantastic Flavor of the Week, fantastic SummerSlam review, fantastic show. I'm seeing the chat room just going, and a bunch of people going in and out and going in and in and out. And so I had some calls on hold. I apologize, didn't have enough time. 347-884-8452 is the number put in your back pocket for next week. Until then, I am Chris Featherstone. I hope you have a wonderful week. Enjoy your week of wrestling. Follow at Crave Wrestling. Check me out on Bleacher Report and Facebook at Crave Wrestling and wrestling.com. Until next week, enjoy your week of wrestling and God bless. Goodbye.